Theo.
Yeah, we had a late show last night at the Belly Up in Solana Beach.
Belly Up.
That's a great venue. It's a classic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's San Diego,
right.
Solana Beach, and it was just insane last night, and it went late, and then I was like, I gotta get up to L.A., so I'm kind of glad to be here already.
Yeah, you're probably exhausted.
No, I'm kind of used to the schedule. I really like Los Angeles.
You know what? I like it too. I like New York and Los Angeles in two different ways.
Me too. I'm with you, buddy.
Yeah.
And London.
London, yeah.
And Tokyo.
Tokyo. I've never been to Tokyo.
And Melbourne.
Melbourne. I've never been to Melbourne. I want to go to Australia.
That's like probably one of my favorite cities in the world.
Really?
Yeah, it's really cool.
God damn it. I haven't seen the world. I've seen Europe, but, you know. Do you want to start with a song?
Sure.
Do it.
Okay, cool.
We're rolling.
Some will call it hump day. I got a dollar in my pocket. Let's go riding in my rocket. I wanna work then play, then work the next day. Ballin' on a Wednesday. You've been working real hard, I've been wanting you harder. You could be prettier, I could be smarter. Wanna pick you up and drive real fast. Let's lift that bar under the overpass. Top shelf liquor don't get you there quicker. Let's get southern comfortable. Ballin' on a Wednesday. Some will call it hump day. I got a dollar in my pocket. Let's go riding in my rocket. I wanna work then play then work the next day. Ballin' on a Wednesday. Got a brother's got a friend who's got a brother who's a cop. We might get pulled over, don't mean we gotta stop. I left the dog at the neighbor's, you gotta sit up for your kids. I'm your hump day DJ playing all your hits. Hey babe, you got a quarter, I wanna hear Hey Porter. Cause Johnny's got all the cash. Ballin' on a Wednesday. Some will call it hump day. I got a dollar in my pocket. Let's go riding in my rocket. I wanna work then play then work the next day. Ballin' on a Wednesday. What's the use in working for the weekend when the weekend ends too quick? By the time I'm through with loving you, you're gonna wanna call in sick. Ballin' on a Wednesday. I didn't go to college, did the school of hard knocks, but I've been changing tires and putting in shocks. Sometimes I wanna scream in the middle of the week. It might be Wednesday, but I'm about to peak. I wanna get out on the highway. Mercury haze, watermelon sugar gonna take away my craze. I got a full tank of gas ready to fly. I'm gonna take it to the top, I'm gonna take it to the sky. Ballin' on a Wednesday. Some will call it hump day. I got a dollar in my pocket. Hey, let's go riding in my rocket. I wanna work then play then work the next day. Ballin' on a Wednesday. I wanna work then play then work the next day. Work then play then work the next day. Ballin' on a Wednesday. G-I-W, baby.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I wish Now, Church was taking pictures, but I wish you guys at home could see him play.
I took video.
Oh, you took video?
Church is on
it. Oh, my God,
it.
You're amazing. And you're amazing.
Thank you. That's a
I'm
brand new one.
I'm the only non-amazing thing here.
Oh,
right
you're
now.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, you don't know. But I got to say, I'm excited. I'm so excited that you're here. Because, you know, I saw you play, like, years and years ago, maybe over 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
It was in New York, and you played with Robbie Foulkes and
oh, I love
two
Robbie.
Other people.
Oh,
and it was
right.
kind of a round robin.
The bottom
thing.
Line.
Yeah, 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 yes, 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 yes. It was
doesn't
exactly
exist
there.
Anymore.
Yeah, I mean, New York's changed all. But I remember just watching it, and you know, I'm a huge Robbie Foulkes fan. And
me
that was,
too.
And that was the first time I saw you, and I'm like, ran out and got, it must have been around 2004, right? Because I got your, I got Morning Wood
yeah.
meeting after, immediately after that. And I thought, God, this guy is, I love his stuff. He's just like me, except he's more talented. he's freer. With everything, he's better looking.
Oh.
He's completely not like me. You're not like me, but you're everything that I aspire to be.
Wow, I think it was like actually 1999 or 2000.
You know what? That's what I remembered, and then I saw that I had those albums, so I must have just kept buying them. Like,
yeah. So you were living in New York.
I was living in New York, yeah.
God, I love New York. I love L.A. too.
Yeah.
It's so cool to be in L.A. right now.
Yeah.
I was really glad to drive up here early when you guys asked if I would come up. I was glad to be a part of this. I was stoked to drive up to L.A. today because I love L.A.
It's a liberal city and you seem like a liberal guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but one thing that that really affected me besides your songs was how funny you were in between the songs and just joking around, which is what I like about Robbie too. I think you two are the funniest comedians I know. I don't really like stand-ups.
Yeah.
You know? But you guys are so funny on stage. And I was just wondering, because, you know, I mean, I started with comedy and I'm trying to write songs now, you know. I've been writing songs my whole life. And this is why I have this podcast, because I'm interested in songwriters. And I want to talk to them.
Yeah.
And my main question for you, because you're so funny, is like when you start a song, when you start writing a song, do you start with like an idea that just kind of makes you laugh a little bit? I mean, and I'm talking in general, not obviously every time, but and then do you find the sincerity within that, or do you start with in an opposite way and start with like kind of a heavy topic and then make it lighter?
Well, for me, there aren't any rules. And
yeah.
Like I would teach songwriting workshops up in Yosemite. We would bring all these musicians would put their stuff on a mule train. And it was through this thing called Southern Yosemite Mountain
Guides.
Oh, my
God. You don't do that anymore?
I'm going to do it again soon.
I'm
doing it with my
it.
Buddy. He got injured, though. It was Tim Bloom from the Mother Hips. So we were both the teachers.
Yeah.
And so we would bring people up there. And the first thing I would say to everybody, because I go to a lot of festivals, too. And a lot of times they'll have me teach a songwriting workshop.
Yeah.
And my thing is, remember, there are no rules.
Yeah.
There's no
rules. I agree.
And so I may be driving down the freeway and I'll get an idea for a song and I'll start laughing.
Yeah.
You know, I had this song I wrote a long time ago. I remember I was leaving Jackson Hole and I had played at a place called the Mangy Moose. And a church bus drove by me. And it was filled with all these kids. And for some reason, I just started making up a song called Hand Job on a Church Bus.
Yeah.
And so that just hit me.
Yeah.
And by the time I'd written it, I performed it in Iowa. And my booking agent had already heard about it.
Yeah.
And she said, you can never do that song again. Which meant to me.
Do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so I did it enough where it sort of ran its course. But I guess what my point is, I may write a hand job on a church bus and then immediately after that, write a song like I Love Everything About You, which is like just a totally sincere love song.
Yeah.
There's nothing funny about it.
Yeah. But I've heard a lot of your stuff and I see both sides.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's like more, if the scale tips on one end more.
I don't know if it does. I'm really bad at keeping track of what I do and things I've done, but I
well,
do know.
You need someone like a secretary.
I do. I do know this. I know that I believe in not censoring myself, and that's what makes art. So I like to keep my whatever, like the pathways of the mm-hmm. brain open, the creative pathways. So I'm always able to write. So no matter what I do, if I have a new song, I'm going to open with it that night at the show. I'm yeah. sort of lucky that I'm not tethered to a hit.
That's great.
So the people that come to see me, you could become an oldies act that's tethered to a hit.
Yeah, and, exactly.
I've never had a hit. Jewel has had a hit with a song I wrote, but not me personally.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
nobody comes expecting to hear that. They're just coming to hear what happened today, like what happened in your life. So
yeah, that's what's great about you. You're just like in the moment.
Yeah, it's a roving monologue. So I may have stories that are greatest hit stories, and people will come requesting a story more than a song.
Wow.
Sometimes, which is really kind
that's
of funny.
Amazing.
They go, tell the story about this. And I'm like, I don't even remember that. But I'll tell you what happened to me today. And then, like, you know, like they always say, never let the truth get in the way of a good story and embellish and make yeah. it so that you have a salient point to the story. Or maybe no point at all, but make it so that it's riveting enough that the audience is watching and then you can seamlessly segue into the next song.
Yeah.
And I sort of just fly by the seat of my pants. I've never used a set list ever.
You know, I've been playing a little bit and I hate set lists. You gotta feel the audience out, right?
Exactly. I like magic to happen because if I get up there and I'm laughing as well and I'm surprising myself, the
exactly.
audience senses the energy.
Yeah.
And an audience is like a horse, and a horse knows when you get on it if you're scared of it. And an audience knows if you come out, if you're not in control by the way you are. So you need to kind of let them know yeah. when you get out there that even if it's like the other night at the film where I'm the middle band, there's 1,000 people in San Francisco,
yeah.
and it was Steep Ravine, then me all alone. They were full bands, then Dust Bowl Revival, and just me solo. And to come out, you have to come out and take 1,000 people that are standing for a rock show
yeah.
and sort of...
Yeah.
Whip them into shape and let them know
yeah,
they're coming into your
world.
Yeah,
it's me now.
And it's pretty fun to do. I love that feeling, you know?
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah.
And so, yeah, getting back to your question, I just believe in not...
What was my question?
Well, kind of with the point you were making, like your semi-question was about writing. Do I think of a line of a song first or do I think of...
comedy versus seriousness.
Yeah, or an element of it. And what it is a lot of times is... The song I just did is a brand new song. It's called Ballin' on a Wednesday. And about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was in Nashville and I bought a sandwich. And so I was with this friend of mine and the lady said to me, okay, that'll be $7.67. And all I had was a $100 bill and it was a Wednesday. So I handed her and she had a big gold tooth.
Yeah.
And when I handed her the $100, she goes, ooh, Ballin' on a Wednesday. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to write a song right now about it. And then I went and wrote the chorus. And then I contacted a buddy of mine in Nashville. We were writing something else. I said, I have this other idea because I'll always, in Nashville, a lot of times somebody comes over and you just throw ideas out if you have people that are really quick. And
yeah.
So I said, I got this idea. And next thing I knew, boom, that song was written. And I had the whole idea of Ballin' on a Wednesday, some will call it
home. That's
day.
Amazing.
I got a dollar in my pocket.
We're here and Church is here too in the room. And she had a great response to that, just like your face. So I just want to open it up. If you want to ask a question, go for it, but you don't have to. You know, I just want, you know, I go by the seat of my pants too.
You got it.
Not just you, asshole.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not to
here, you want to talk into the mic?
Sure. Not to.
That's the only thing I have one rule, talk into the mic.
Not to tether you to a hit, but I'm a big Jewel fan. Which song did you write?
Oh, we co-wrote You Were Meant For Me, and it's a song that goes like this.
I know that song.
Let's hear your version.
I know that song very well.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do your version right now?
That's cool.
I hear the clock.
She's a great singer.
I feel so far off from where I've been. I got my eggs and my pancakes, too. Got maple syrup, everything but you. I break the yolks and make a smiley face. I kinda like it in my brand new place. I wipe spots up off the mirror, don't leave my keys in the door. I never put wet towels on the floor anymore, cause dreams last for so
calm mama, but she was out for a walk. Consoled a cup of coffee, but I didn't wanna talk.
Picked up the paper, it was more bad news. More hearts being broken, more people being used. Put on my coat in the pouring rain. I saw a movie, it just wasn't the same. Cause it was happy or I was sad, and it made me miss you oh so bad. Cause dreams last for so long, even after you're gone. And I know that you love me, and soon you will see you were meant for me, and I was meant for I'm doing fine. Besides, what would I say if I had you on the line? Same old story, not much to say. Hearts are broken every day. Turn the shades down and take a drink. And a good look around. Put on my PJs and hop into bed. I'm half alive, but I feel mostly dead. And I try to tell myself it'll all be alright. I just shouldn't think anymore tonight. Cause dreams last for so long.
Church, if you ever interrupt me again, you're fired. Wow, that was amazing.
You just pulled that all out of memory. That...
Holy shit. Well, you were prompting her a little.
15 years. I needed a few prompts. Yeah. I haven't sang in like 15 years, but I sang it in a few talent shows.
Talent shows.
Wow. Hey, I know Row, Row, Row Your Boat. You didn't write that, did you? God damn it.
That was crazy.
That was amazing. That was amazing.
Good job.
That was way too good for this podcast.
That was an excellent
job. I quit now.
Oh my gosh. That was really special because...
Yeah, that was beautiful.
We wrote that together down in Mexico. And,
really?
Yeah. In Mexico, down in a place called Bahia. A place called Bahia de San Luis Gonzaga. And we went down together to go camping and surfing and hang out and write songs. And... we ended up on this marijuana drug bust. Whoa. On a boat with Mexican federales and 50 tons of weed, guns pulled, and they captured all these people, brought them on the boat, made me carry all the weed. We got back to the shore, and Jewel grabbed me and goes, let's get out of here. And then the cops said, Esteban, ven aquí, which means Steve, come here. And I said, what? They said, this is the largest drug bust we've had in years. Mm. And all these guys were handcuffed. And I go, well, what are you going to do? And they go, we're going to have a party. So they got all those guys together, and then we were getting ready to leave, and then the cop said, Esteban, ven aquí. And I said, what? He goes, let's take a picture. So we got our arms around the cops, and these pictures are on the internet. If you type in Jewel drug bust photos, you'll see us holding AK-47s and Corona beers and bags of weed behind us, all this pot. And then they gave me some of the weed that I could have to keep. He goes, here, take some. And I was scared I was going to get arrested.
Yeah.
He sliced open one of the bags. Then Jewel went back to our hotel room to fall asleep. And then I stayed out and gave the weed to some lady who was cooking some spaghetti sauce, and she fed it to a bunch of campers that were from Salt Lake City, a Mormon youth group. They didn't know. They all got dosed. And then...
Wait. She put it in the sauce?
This lady did, yeah.
Oh shit. God.
And then I came back and Jewel was asleep in the... And I woke up in the morning and I grabbed the guitar and I just started going...
Oh no! This is the best.
And that's how it was written. And then
ever.
She's still asleep, and I had gotten up earlier. I wake up earlier, and then she's like this, still asleep. And I was going, I hear the clock, it's 6 a.m. I feel so far from where I've been. I got my eggs, I got my pancakes too. I got my maple syrup, everything but you. And so she wakes up, she's like, what's that? And I go, oh, it's this cool song. I guess I'm just working on it. And like, it's so weird when you think of like the time space continuum, how that song sort of changed me financially. It was like this, because it sold 15 million records.
Right, it was huge.
So then the song ends up going big. And then they did a video for it. Now I was in the video with her going like this. Like, if you look at the video, I'm the guy behind her and I'm not wearing a shirt. And then I have a shirt on. I'm like, and that thing was played all over MTV. And we at that time, me and Jewel lived together in La Jolla in San Diego. And we shared a little apartment there. And then we got to be the remote host of the MTV Music Awards sitting on our couch. It was pretty crazy.
Whoa.
And then I was in that video and that video blew up. So we recorded that at Neil Young's ranch. We got to live there. And Neil Young's pedal steel player, Ben Keith, who's now deceased, he produced the record. And then they redid that song because they said, we think this is a hit. And so they got this big video director and she said, I want Steve to be in it. So I was in it. And they kept my guitar part, but redid it with this other producer named Peter Collins. And the bass line on the single is Flea. So Flea played bass on it. And but on the original version, it was these guys, it was the Stray Gators, Neil's band. But the whole record was made and we lived at Neil's ranch. And that was like this crazy experience for me because the drummer on that track is the drummer. He's now deceased, but he, Kenneth Buttry, and he was the guy that played the drums on Bob Dylan's Rainy Day Women number 12 and 38.
Yeah.
That the opening of Everybody Must Get Stoned that goes, ra-da-da-da-da-da-da, ra-da-da-da-da-da-da, bam. And I had him do that for me. I got to hang out with these guys because I'm such a music fan. And I was like, I couldn't believe my luck. And then I didn't think the song would get big, but it got huge.
Yeah.
But kind of going back to what we said, I've never been tied to a hit in the way that, like, Jewel, you know, if she plays, she's got
to
do those hits.
She has to do those, yeah.
And or whatever. You think of any band that has a big hit. But for whatever reason, my career has always been sort of in the... laying low in the underground cult regions of music that has allowed me to play festivals and all these places. And
yeah.
We do, not that I don't want to hit, it would be great.
I know, but you're kind of in the perfect,
I'm lucky.
The sweet spot.
You're oh, yeah,
the
people show
spot.
Up, they pay money, and I get,
yeah.
and they come to listen. I get to tell stories.
And you don't have to play your hits. Yeah, it's great.
Right.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy career.
What did, since this is about songwriting,
yeah.
I hate to like run
no worries.
A tight ship. I run a tight ship.
That's what my dad always says.
I know. It's my joke term because I'm the loosest guy ever. I'm a loose cannon. But so what was it like writing with her? Once you came up with that first part, did you guys like trade off lyrics? Or?
Yeah, we would, whenever me and Jewel would, we wrote recently in Nashville together something. We're able to just throw lines back and forth and, she really is a strong songwriter and she has good instincts for, like she would say to me, let's not pulsarize this one. That's a good one. Cause if, and what she means by that is add some crazy death where somebody gets stabbed in the eye with an ice pick or
oh my God.
Some crazy event, some
That's
weird
That's why
thing.
I love you.
So she's like, let's not pulsarize this one. And so it's pretty funny.
I
how
can't
she
believe
came
you
up
let her
turn.
Jewelize it.
Yeah, jewelize it. And I'm so thankful because I would have never said you were meant for me and I was meant for you. I would have made it
more cynical.
Brutal.
You're the John Lennon of the group.
Yeah, I was more cynical. I'm really glad that she...
Yeah.
I was lucky that in that moment we collided in time.
Yeah.
And more than that, that when you're with somebody and writing songs, and at the time, you know, we were kind of romantically involved too. So for that to be happening is a whole special thing to add if you're writing with somebody. that you have a certain sense of intimacy, but then you can just as easily meet a stranger in a room, like in Nashville, a friend will come over or somebody that I meet and I'm able to just sit down and I like to have a coffee first with them and kind of pick their brain and then come up with an idea and say, well, what are you working on? And I can write with comedians too. Like I love.
Are you hitting on me?
Comedians. Yeah, I am. Like comedians, I think there's bring a whole something really cool to the table.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm not really a comedian, but I have a question because you mentioned coffee. Did you ever drink? You must have drank, right?
Alcohol?
Yeah.
Oh, for years. Yeah, I was in the Rug Burns. We were the drunkest band on the planet.
Right, exactly. I mean, I knew the answer.
Yeah.
And then you stopped.
I drank a lot.
When did you stop?
I stopped 12 and a half years ago.
Wow. So
I've
like
been sober a long time.
Wow. So you did you stop? Were you drinking?
I stopped
when
in
I saw
2004,
it?
November 30th.
Oh, okay.
So. I couldn't make it to Christmas. You find that a lot in people's sobriety dates. They're like, they're
Christmas,
like around November.
Christmas is looming,
or
man.
January, they're like, I go, oh, you made it to Christmas? Because usually around Christmas, there's all kinds of powders and substances around that you're ingesting. Had I never gotten involved in the powders, I would probably still be drinking. But I was a wild drinker, and I love playing bars. I love being around people smoking weed. I don't care if somebody does a line in front of me. I like people. I want the audience to drink. I don't want to punish the world just because I was done. I want people to drink. Like I don't like playing in churches, real stuffy folk churches. And a lot of people like that. I love, like the other night, I played the Walnut Room in Denver. And it's like, they're drinking. Weed's legal. I don't want people to be punished just because I'm out of control.
So
and
that,
actually, it made my shows better not drinking. Like I was able to still retain the recklessness,
right.
However, a focused recklessness.
Yeah. Well, it kind of answers my next question because, you know, I kind of need a little drink every now and then to write a little
bit. Of course.
But you seem like you're pretty in touch with your insanity, which is a plus. Because I've got insanity too.
Yeah.
You know? And that, I think you need insanity to write a little bit, you know?
I definitely have insanity in my family. And I come from like a long line of crazy people, especially on my mom's side. That's my grandparents on her side.
I think Church has a question.
But did you notice a change in how you were writing or even like what you were writing about? Was there something different in that transition or was there just absolutely no change at all?
In sobriety?
Yeah.
You mean? Yeah. At first, I really feel my songs were a bit guilt-ridden and I was doing the typical thing where you're like writing songs about how wasted I was and regrets.
Yeah.
And then I got through that period.
You're more
optimistic. It's almost like we're on this board game of life.
Yeah.
Okay, play this, join the band, do this, hopefully get a hit song, break up with a girl, go in here, get arrested for something or something happens and then throw up, vomit, take too many drugs, and then getting these life experiences, get sober, now write sober record, cliched sober record, certain songs, and then from there, reaching an area where I feel that I'm at now, which is just, I believe, I love waking, every morning I wake up happy. I'm one of these people that I really am pretty steady on that.
That's great.
I wake up happy and I still love my job so much. Like tonight I'm going to play the troubadour. I don't care if I'm going to play somebody's house, the troubadour. As long as I'm working and people are there to hear songs, I'm so
happy. That's how I feel, not to bring this back to me.
Bring it back.
Yeah, bring it back to me. But I just want to like get my music out there. I don't even care if I ever make money. I just want to be able – I want people to want to hear it. And that's,
exactly.
And it feels like that's what you want to do. So when you're writing – are you're writing, even though you want to please everyone with your songs, do you write mostly just for yourself and from your heart?
I write for me, In fact, I will write and then people will say, why would you even write that?
Yeah.
You're not going to do it. And then when they say that, I think,
Do it! Yeah.
Just when somebody tells me I can't do that, that's the worst thing they can say to me.
Exactly.
Because I'm going to do it. And even if it means career suicide, I just have to... I like the challenge of going out on stage.
I think a little suicide
taking a chance.
I think a little suicide is good for a career every now and then.
Yeah, because like if I had to be like maybe Crosby, Stills, and Nash and do the same songs every night, yeah. and then the audience gets up to pee when you're doing your new stuff. That would be a drag to me. That's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
You end up being a cover band of yourself at a certain
exactly.
point when if you're ever lucky enough to be that big, and then you continue on in the same band or whatever. Eventually,
and if you're
your
Dylan,
band is
you...
like a cover band, and you're just playing
yeah.
that every night.
And if you're Bob Dylan, you're a bad cover band. Yeah, when I first heard you, I was really into it, and I'm kind of a bad fan because I also write music, so I didn't buy more of your music because I was so connected to it. I'm like, I don't want to be like Steve Poltz.
Right.
You know? I don't want to be affected by that. I don't want, and, you know, you seem like you've done this a lot and you're in touch with who you are. Are you ever afraid that you're going to be influenced too much by someone else? Or are you just like really comfortable with who you are and your style at this point?
I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin
okay.
as far as that goes. So yeah.
Dumb question.
But I love listening to other stuff.
Yeah.
I like so many different kinds of music.
See, I wish I could.
It really helps me to listen to stuff.
Yeah.
And I always tell people this in songwriting, learn other people's songs. Like
right.
learn how to play.
Right.
Learn how to play. Let's see. Because of the chords, it'll affect
yeah.
you if you learn something like this.
Right.
Memories light the corners of my mind.
Yeah.
Misty watercolor memories of the way we were. So you learn
yeah.
stuff like that you wouldn't have learned because it's
exactly.
not really in your wheelhouse. And people think you're taking the piss. But there's nothing better than doing that
no.
on stage at an indie rock club. And people at first start laughing. And then they're like,
no,
he's not kidding.
It's a satisfying song.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Marvin Hamlisch,
yeah.
Marilyn and Alan Bergman. I
yeah.
mean, whoa, holy crap, the fact that they wrote that. And then go from there and learn an old John Hartford song.
Yeah.
He was just such a great writer. Or anything that's just out of your wheelhouse. And then after that, you will write. Some way those chords are going to come out.
Exactly. Like, I'm an idiot because if I listen to Steve Poltz over and over again, I'm not going to be Steve Poltz.
You're going to be Dino.
Yeah. And A, because I'm not as good, and B, because I'm me.
You're Dino.
Yeah, I'm Dino.
Only one Dino.
I'm so happy that you know my name. yeah. No. So, people always ask me because I say I write songs and they say, what's your genre? And I have no idea. And you have a song called Folk Singer.
Yes, I do.
Right. And, you know, you have an acoustic guitar, but I've heard a ton of your songs and you run the gamut of like just like a bunch of genres. Do you, what do you say when people ask you, you know, do you have any kind of answer for that?
For a while, I'd tell people that when they'd say, what kind of music do you play? For some reason, I would just go really slow speed metal.
That's amazing.
Just because I like the
yeah.
way it sounded.
Yeah.
And then they would just kind of, they'd be going, wait. And then walk away really quick.
It kind of is.
It
in
is.
A way, yeah.
So like what I want in my show, I want to challenge myself. So lately, a lot of times I'll come out, and I haven't done it in the last couple of months, but I've done it. I got on a roll of it for a while. I walk out and I tell myself, I'm not going to pick up the guitar for at least 15 minutes. And
oh.
I grab the mic and I walk around the stage like Chris Rock or somebody. And I'll have a story about something
yeah.
that happened. And I've got to make it riveting enough where people are laughing
yeah.
and they're feeling something. And see, my mom was an English teacher and a kind of strict, you know, I had to get very good grades. And she always said, who was there? What happened? And how did it make you feel?
It's almost journalism.
And
yeah.
how did it make you
yeah.
feel is the part people forget. They might
yeah,
tell you who
yeah.
was there and what happened.
No,
but
no,
the
you're
clincher,
right.
Yeah. The sucker punch that Randy Newman's very good at
yeah.
is who was there, what happened? How did it make you
yeah,
feel?
Because
when
amazing.
You tell an audience how something made you feel, then you're getting into something
yes.
very real, goosebump inducing, tears.
Yeah.
And so I want to take people on a journey. I want them to cry. I want them to laugh. I want to have some substance. And also, in a corny way, I want to make the world a better place through, I want my show to have a sense of redemption in the fact when it's done, I want it to be, everybody's like, yeah.
That's storytelling.
That is. Yeah. And music and storytelling. And so it's like the church of Bruce Springsteen. I have never left his show once and didn't feel freaking great about myself. Yeah. Just like, holy fuck, what just happened? I walk out of that show and I'm like, I have this sense of community and he's the boss, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And with Randy Newman, I leave a show and I get this sense of cynicism that I love well, this darkness. So I'm drawn to both. I just need some sort of sense of humor in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I like a sense of humor.
Randy Newman has it.
That's why I loved the Dead Milkmen. Like, when it came to punk rock, I didn't like punk rock that took itself too seriously. I mean, that's why I loved the Replacements. They were like the ultimate mixture to me, and they were my heroes and still are. Like, you know that song by Westerberg that goes, I just figured this out two nights ago.
Right.
It's the most beautiful song. It goes like this. Pass around the lampshade, somewhere there's a party. Here it's never ending, can't remember when it started. Pass around the lampshade, there'll be plenty of room in jail. And then this next part is so awesome because he goes, if being alone's a crime, I'm serving forever. If being strong's your kind, then I need help here with this feather. If being afraid is a crime, we hang side by side at the swinging party down the line. I mean, that is so beautiful.
That's beautiful.
And I love it because the second verse, he goes, pound the prairie pavement, a losing proposition. Because they're such a Midwest band. Pound the prairie pavement, a losing proposition. Quitting school, going to work, and never going fishing.
Yeah.
There's water all around me, but I'll never learn to swim now. It's just brutal, but and then they would go from that into Tommy Gets His Tonsils Out.
Yeah.
So they were my teachers. Loudon Wainwright was my teacher. Mm. Ricky Lee Jones was my teacher. Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Jesus Christ Superstar, Godspell.
Yeah.
Those were my biggest teachers, especially Jesus Christ Superstar and Godspell, because I was raised very religious in a Catholic church.
Oh, that's interesting. So where
so
were you raised?
I had that guilt. Well, we moved from Canada when I was a kid to Pasadena.
How old were you?
Just a youngster, little kid, you know?
Wow, from Canada to Pasadena.
Yeah, and then we moved to Palm Springs, and then my uncle, I had this gay Uncle Louie, my mom's brother, and he moved out.
Gay Uncle Louie.
And he moved in with us.
Is he still around?
He died last year.
Oh, man.
And he was like one of my, he's the reason I can go like this.
He taught you that?
He played classical piano.
Yeah, yeah.
And he took me to the Hollywood Bowl when I was just a little kid to see Julian Bream, this classical guitarist. Mm-hmm. And when I left, I said, Uncle Louie, I want to learn how to play classical guitar. And he said, you have to practice every day, boy. He only called me boy. And I go, all right. And then he taught me to sing from my diaphragm. So I learned all the songs from Oliver and all this stuff. But then he gave me Beatles records, and I just would study this music and got so into it, and I lived for music, and I was always in my own little world. So when we moved, that really influenced me where I grew up, and then we moved to the desert, and I met Elvis Presley.
You met Elvis in the desert?
Yeah, in Palm Springs. And
was he a vision or really Elvis?
Met him.
Wow.
Yeah, he put me on his shoulders and carried me around. Yeah, we met
Elvis
him at the airport.
Elvis Presley? Oh, my God.
And so that really affected me because I loved Elvis and I watched all his movies. And then met Bob Hope, Frank Sinatra. Because we lived in Palm Springs.
How did Bob Hope carry you?
Bob Hope didn't. He came to the church only on Sundays. We called him Easter Sunday Catholic. So I was an altar boy. And when he came up for communion, what they did back then is they'd say, the body of Christ. And then you stick your tongue out. And they put a host, and the host represents Jesus's body, right?
Yeah.
So as an altar boy, you're told, do not let that host fall on the ground, or you will kill Jesus. So like, if somebody came up, like Bob Hope would come up, and I'd be the altar boy, and you'd hold this gold plate, and Bob Hope would come up, and the priest would go, the body of Christ. And this is like when Bob Hope was Bob Hope. I mean, very famous, and he goes, amen, Father. And he looks at me and he winks, sticks his tongue out. The priest puts the host on it and it rolled off. And in, like in slow motion, I went, no! And I dove and caught it.
You caught it!
And I saved the world because Jesus wouldn't have existed and you guys would all be in Satan's hellfire.
Did it touch his tongue before you caught it?
Oh, yeah. His saliva sort of dripped on my wrist. And
Jesus,
then,
have you washed your hand?
No, I never will. It stinks. Smell my hand. And then after that, he tipped us like we were bus boys, but we were altar boys. He tipped us each $5. And back then you could go to Thrifty's and get a triple scoop of ice cream for 15 cents.
Wow.
And I just bought ice cream with it. And Bob Hope was my best friend. And it was the coolest thing in the world. So yeah, I was raised with this religious upbringing. And it really affected my songwriting because I was raised with this tremendous sense of guilt. You know, like the first time having sex, you know, and trying drugs and drinking and living this life where you want to please your parents, yet you're just crazy and you don't know why you're crazy because my grandparents were crazy. That's where the alcoholism came from.
Thank God.
And me running around naked on stage and smashing guitars and saying fuck God on stage and through all these circular things, and now I have this great relationship with whatever my idea of my maker is, where I'm not afraid to talk about it on stage. Like the more, what I learned was when I was drinking, I thought I had to drink because to take the edge off. But God, I don't want to lose the fucking edge. I want the edge.
Yeah.
Play the blues, Edge.
You still got it. And
no, I want the edge. So I come out now, and I love to say to the audience, okay, before we get started, I want to make sure everybody in the audience has accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior, or you can't be at my show. Just like some fucking crazy shit that I don't believe, but that's fun. Just to make people go, what the hell's going on here? And then, so I used to get Wonder Bread when I was in the Rugburns, and I would play communion. I go, come up, I'll show you how to get communion, even if you're not a Catholic, and I'd make it into little hosts. Everybody'd be drinking it, I'd put a priest call on, I go, body of Christ, they go, amen. And then another time, I'd make cinnamon toast at midnight for all the audience. I get all these toasters and 8-track tapes. All I wanted was to experiment and have it be freeform entertainment. But I guess what my point is, I want there to be a form of salvation and not a religious thing. Last night I had everybody in the belly up, 600 people, arm in arm, a whole crowd singing This Land Is Your Land. And I don't care whether, and out of 600 people, I guarantee you some of those people in that audience are Trumpers. But by the end of the fucking night, I got those goddamn Trumpers with their arms around the other folks, my people, and they were singing This Land Is Your Land. And I subversively threw in the forbidden Woody verses, like in the shadow of the...
I don't know those verses.
Verses they didn't teach you in school.
Tell us. Preach it, baby.
In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people by the relief office. I seen my people, and as they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, was this land made for you and me? And as I rambled, I saw a sign there, and on the sign it said, no trespassing. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. This land was made for you and me.
Wow.
And people were crying, yeah. Man. They had their arms around each other. I do it real slow like that. And they had their arms around each other. And man, I felt like I used my gifts for something good. Yeah. Like when I left, everybody was happy.
Yeah.
I crowd surfed to that three nights ago at the Fillmore. I made a loop. I played it all alone. I had my harmonica. I put on my looping pedal and I jumped out in the crowd and crowd surfed to 800 people at the Fillmore. After earlier, I'd gotten booed by a couple people for singing a song I have called "Hey God, I'll Trade You Donald Trump for Leonard Cohen."
Right.
And I sang that song and I added the Chris Cornell verse because Chris had just died. And so after that, I can still win them back over because I will say to the audience, now I know some of you don't like that and I do get hate mail for that song, but that's okay. I welcome your hate mail. I don't expect you to be like me. I love your hate mail. And then they start laughing.
Yeah.
I say, I may be liberal, but I do have a Republican accountant. Always have a Republican accountant. You can kind of like, I think that there's a greater good and that we have a lot more in common than we know. And yeah, there's battle lines drawn, but I still am the optimist, you know, half glass full guy.
Yeah, and it's great to make those people laugh, and they're just people. We're all confused.
We are confused. Yeah. Oh my God, my whole family's confused.
Yeah, yeah. I try not to get too angry at people who don't think like I do, because first of all, I'm insane. So you know, let's all embrace our insanity.
Right?
Yeah.
God, yesterday I was going to the show at the Belly Up and we're staying at my girlfriend's sister's house. Now, my girlfriend Sharon, her sister Chris, got their mom's car after their mom passed away a few years back. And it's a 1992 Lexus in pristine, perfect condition.
Thank God it's in good shape.
It's like one of those cool looking Lexuses that looks neat because now it looks classic. You know how cars change shape?
Yeah.
And after 30 years, they start looking really cool again.
Yeah, yeah.
This car looks cool. So I got everything loaded up to go to the Belly Up to sound check. Got everything in the car, cars in park. I put it in reverse and then I put my foot on the brake and I'm sitting there. And then I say, oh, I got to make a call. I'm going to call my mom and dad on the way to the Belly Up. So I need my headphones. So in case a cop won't see me talking on the phone, I need my headphones. So I get out of the car with it in reverse. I'm spacey.
Yeah.
Car starts slowly rolling. My girlfriend Sharon's coming out of the house. She looks at me and she can't even say anything because she sees the car moving. And she just goes, oh. And I go, what? And I figure there's a bee around me because she's allergic to bees. And I'm just like, I do this to her. Just like, just whatever. And I turn around, I see the car rolling and it's going to go off a ditch into a gully. And I have at that one moment, she tries to stop it, hits her hip. And I go, if I jump in it now and I don't make it, it's going to run me over and I'll die. I'll get crushed in this gully. So I make a split decision to not jump in the car. And we both watch it go over the edge.
Oh.
And then we got it towed out. And
how's it looking?
It looks okay. I've drove
all
it up
right,
here.
Yeah.
The back is scratched up, but it had to get towed out. We couldn't drive it out. And they and her and her sister were going, that's our mom. She was trying to tell us something. You know, everybody looks for a reason, especially Sharon's sister, Chris, would really look for the reason.
Right. Well, how do you look? Like, but that was kind of going to be my question. Like, what's your most religious song? And I'm not talking about like organized religion, but your form of religion. Do you have like a song that you feel like... You know, you have
that song I just sang to you.
Yeah.
Woody Guthrie is my religion right now. I'm fascinated by him. I'm reading a really good book about him, and I love that. I love talking about God on stage because it's so funny to me. This whole religious, it's like a cartoon when you really read the Bible and things in it. It's like, what is this, a cartoon? These superpowers?
Oh, yeah.
And it's so fun to talk to people about it. And I'll say to the audience, all my friends are atheists. I'm too scared to be an atheist. And I say to the audience, I go, wouldn't you just want an insurance policy? What if the shit's real? What's it going to hurt me to say, okay, I kind of believe in this shit, even though I know it's a...
I kind of feel like even if I'm in hell, least I'm conscious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So religion makes me laugh because it really, you can't get, if you were to walk me today down the road to a Catholic church, I immediately would put my hand in the holy water and make the sign of the cross. It's brainwashing.
Yeah.
It is in my body
right.
no matter what. And if there was a mass going on and I didn't have anything to do, I would walk in and participate in that mass. And my favorite thing about the Catholic mass is the way they do their prayers, everybody's like robots.
Yeah.
And so I used to, my favorite thing was being a little kid and I'd sit by my sister and she'd be to my right and then there'd be my mom and there'd be my dad. So I'd be sitting there on the far left and I could do the Lord's Prayer and I would call it robot Catholic and they'd get to a part of the mass and I'd go, Lord, I am not worthy to receive you, only say the word and I shall be healed, our Father who art in heaven. And I would act like I was a robot and my sister would be laughing so hard because you couldn't laugh in church. My mom was very strict about it. And then I discovered French Catholic and I would do the Our Father as if I was a snotty Frenchman because I got kicked out of being an altar boy because I would ask the priest if when I would pour the wine, I'd say, this is a 1967 Cabernet Sauvignon. You would like it with the filet mignon. So instead, I would sit by my sister and get to the Lord's Prayer and I go, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth. And then Kathy would start laughing so hard. My mom would say, what are you laughing at? And I was so good at keeping a straight face. And she'd go, he's pretending he's French during the Lord's Prayer. And I would look at my mom and say, I don't know what she's talking about. And my mom would grab her by the ear and yank her over to the other side. And I would sit there and just be able to pull it off. Like, I was a horrible person. So I love the fact, in a way, I'm really glad I was raised with this guilt because it really affected me as a songwriter. And it gave me, if you're raised with a perfect life, what do you have to write
about? Happy songs are boring.
You need demons in your life. Demons
and
weird childhoods, they create artists.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yes, definitely. But who's had a perfect childhood? No one.
No.
Everyone should be a songwriter.
You're right. It's good therapy. It's cathartic, right?
I love it. Yeah.
I'm so lucky that I get to pour it out on paper. Yeah. I'll tell you, it wasn't easy when I first started writing songs.
Tell me about that. When did you first start?
When I first started writing songs, I only wrote instrumentals because I was playing classical guitar. When I was six, I started playing classical guitar.
Only instrumentals at six. That's amazing.
Yeah, and then I wrote a song for my dog, and my dog, his name was Bojo, but I called him Hunson because I called him Honey, and then I shortened it to Hunson. So I go, Hunson, Hunson. And he would know that it was me, but the first song I learned how to play, they had an English accent, the singers. So I thought if you sang, you had to sing a song with an English accent because that's how the songs I heard, like Herman's Hermit. So when they said, I'm an RDA for you.
I love that.
An RDA for you,
I wish the Beatles sang
that. And so I heard that. So the first song I wrote was Hunson a Dunson because I couldn't think of a word to rhyme with Hunson. So I came up with Hunson a Dunson and that was for my dog. And my dog loved me, but I was allergic to him. So it was like my dog's calling. And it was the first song I wrote. And I went, Hunson a Dunson, where's your Bunsen? I saw it the other day. Was it walking? Sit talking. I don't know. I could not say. And they'd jump up and lick my face, and I'd sneeze. So
did you put
the first song?
Did you put guitar to that?
No, it was a cappella. I couldn't figure out the chords how to do it.
Can you do it now? Try it.
Now I would go. Now I'd make it country. I'd go.
Yeah.
Bunsen a Dunsen, where is your Bunsen? I thought I saw it the other day. Bum, bum, bum. Was it walking or was it talking? I don't know. I could not say.
Oh, my God. You got to add that to your... add that to your non-existent set list.
Yeah. So... Okay, getting back to that. So then I tried to write songs, but I couldn't. You know, like I was listening to all this music, and I thought if I was going to write a song, it had to be like Jackson Browne or James Taylor or something. And only they can be them. We all have our own fingerprints. And then a strange thing happened. My sister got a gig as a DJ at this college radio station called KCR. And I was listening to Pink Floyd and Jackson Browne. And she came home with this album called The Dickies, Dawn of the Dickies, this punk rock band. But they were funny. And then she started bringing home all kinds of stuff. And then brought home Elvis Costello, My Aim Is True. Brought home the Sex Pistols, Never Mind the Bullocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. And I discovered all this music that you could say crazy things in. I go, yeah! And it set me free. So then I tried to write songs and I still couldn't write songs. And then what I had the biggest epiphany one morning. I woke up hungover and I was broken up with a girl I was seeing. I was really sad and there was pizza there and that was all there was and beer bottles on the floor and just ashes and shit, you know. And I remember I grabbed the guitar and I was like... There's a cold piece of pizza in the fridge if you want it. A stale glass of beer on the table by the Playboys. Did you see Miss March? God, she looks so young. This single life, it sure is fun.
Yeah, I know that song.
That became the lead track of my first record with the Rugburns.
Was that your first record?
Well, we had done cassettes.
Yeah.
That was the first Rugburns. We got signed to Bizarre Planet Records up
in
L.A.
Right, because isn't that song on Morningwood?
Morningwood.
Yeah.
That was the first nationally done Rugburns. We had done records in our garage on cassettes. We had cassette release parties. Like, I'm so lucky I got to do this.
So what year was that?
The year that
album, yeah.
The Rugburns, 1992, maybe?
Okay, that's why I'm confused, because
93?
I just looked on iTunes and it said that album was 2004, but that must be when the CD came out or something like that. Or like a reissue or something.
Maybe a reissue. Yeah, so that Rugburns one was like,
That's a great song. Can you do the whole song?
Yeah, let me see if I remember it. There's a cold piece of pizza in the fridge if you want it. A stale glass of beer on the table by the Playboys. Did you see Miss March? God, she looks so young. This single life, it sure is fun. We can go to the lounge at the Holiday Inn. Hear my favorite band play the latest Michael Jackson song about a boy with a really nice bike. This single life, it sure is fun. We'll snort some cocaine in the bathroom by the condom dispenser. Talk about the barmaid. I hear she'll take her pants off if you drive a Camaro. Life just seems better. This single life, it sure is fun. I am still a young man, relatively speaking. It's really pretty cool. My friends, they're old and married. What a bunch of stupid fools. Chicks at the bar and collect all our pennies. Stumble to our cars and we'll drive real fast to Denny's. I'll put my hand up her skirt. We'll eat a couple grand slams and I'll find out she's a man. This single life, it sure is fun. In the morning when you wake up, there's a dental hygienist lying in your bed. She really thinks you're a dentist. You said you'd give her a job and you'd take her to see Snoop Doggy Dog. This single life is sure is fun. Well, there's a cold piece of pizza in the fridge if you want it. Bottle of aspirin on the table by the hustlers. Did you see Miss Beaver Hunt? God, I feel so old. This single life is sure is fun. I haven't sang that in so long. It's like one of my earliest songs. It's so funny.
Yeah. Well, because it's your early song and you put a little like a footnote when you said I'm a young man.
Relatively speaking.
Does that keep you from singing it a little bit? Because it's like, because I have songs that I wrote when I was a kid and this is the first time I'm playing them. And I'm like, wow, I'm calling myself a young boy.
No, I think it still holds up with the body of whatever work I've done, but it's definitely got a different sentiment.
Right. You definitely seem like a boy, a young man, in a good way.
Yeah,
you
know? Like the shit I was saying in the song. I think that around that era, I was writing songs that were like really more crass, like Sky Fucking Line of Toronto, and I love crass, don't get me wrong, or I Want to Learn About Love. Yeah. Like they had like this dark side to them that was like,
well, that song had a dark side.
I
Want to
Learn About Love. Single Life does. Like, I Want to Learn About Love. Like, it's so funny. Like, when I listen to the older songs, it's like, my mouth was just as dry as the tampon dispenser in the women's bathroom at the Oceanside bus station.
Yeah.
A constipated woman barged in on me and said, eek, a boy, get out before I call Queer Nation. But the police did arrive and they said, what's with this guy? He's been watching these women pee, doing a study like he's Dr. Leakey, just to learn about love. But I wanna learn about love. I want to learn about love. I want to learn about love. Can you show me today? Well, I walked into the adult bookstore. And there, I can't remember it. There
was about we have patience. Let's
God, it was so, that song was like so intense. Pretty. That song's really intense, actually, when I listen to it. It's like this guy is searching for love in a song. And I was like writing really in an honest way. And I was scared to do these songs when I first wrote them. As a songwriter, I was like, because I was doing these other songs that people had written. So when I would do them for the first time, I wouldn't say I wrote it. I would just do them. I had read this interview with Huey Lewis, of all people, of Huey Lewis in the news. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone years ago, and I remembered, he said, we were playing in Menlo Park up in Northern California, and we were playing in this blues bar, and people wanted to hear covers. We were a cover band. And then he said, we came up with this theory where we would do a song, but it would be one of ours. And he said, we called it Infiltrate, then Double Cross. So they'd get the audience to like them, then they'd double cross them with the original.
Then they
so that sort of became my mantra. So I would write a song like Single Life and I would do it mixed in, but I wouldn't say, hey, you guys, this is a song I wrote. Yeah. Instead, I would just do it. It was sneaky.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, what I noticed, I'd be on a break, people come up, oh my God, I love that song. Which song? Single Life. What is that? And I go, oh, I wrote it. What? You wrote that? And they go, what else have you written? And then that's what spurred me on. Amazing. I needed an attaboy to make me want to keep writing. You need some way you're going to get an attaboy.
There's Single Life by Paul Simon.
Yeah, exactly. Like you hear these songs. And then first couple times I did Single Life, I remember I was scared to do it. And then it became a part of my my work, and yeah. people were requesting it, and I go, I guess we're recording it. And then it's called like finding your voice as a songwriter.
Yeah.
Just like we have fingerprints, we all have a voice. And I really believe I can coax a song out of anybody. That's my strength, is because I can be an idiot. So when I get with somebody, yeah. they see I'm just throwing out idiot lines that they're like, well, this guy's an idiot. I can do this. It can't be that hard. You're getting paid to do this? You know what I mean?
I got
to
take your class, man.
And so I really believe that everybody has a story to tell and everybody yeah, has a voice.
I believe
voice.
That too.
And there's nothing more beautiful than seeing somebody really scared on stage playing a song they wrote with their hands shaking. It makes me cry. Yeah. Especially I play Sisters Folk Festival. I'll teach at the Americana Song Camp the week before. They become like my kids. Yeah. I started crying watching them sing these songs with their hands. They've never sang on a mic. Their hands are like this. And I know that feeling,
yeah.
you know, of like blowing it,
yeah.
feeling like you're blowing it. And you need to get your 10,000 hours of performance, songwriting, recording.
Yeah, I mean, it took me 52 years to really get the guts to start singing in front of people.
It know? Takes a long time, bro.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
does.
Well, me longer than most. Now, so when you find love, what do you write about?
When you find love?
Yeah.
Well, gosh, you could write about anything. You could write about maybe the way the person makes you feel. You can throw humor yeah. into it. I could sit with somebody. Okay, this guy came over to my house recently. His name is Anthony DaCosta. Yeah. And he said, man, I just slept with this girl. She's this great fiddle player in Nashville, Tennessee. And he goes, and we had just written this other song. He goes, man, she's so hot. And we had sex. And we're laying in bed after sex. And, you know, we're sitting there. And then she starts telling me about other guys she has slept with. And I don't want to hear that shit. She's telling me about breakup. She's and he's like, I just had sex with this girl.
Yeah.
And she's talking about these other guys. And I immediately grabbed the guitar. Because I just was like, I call them vomit songs.
Yeah.
And I went like this. And I go... The details of the guys you slept with, guys you wept with. I don't need to know all the details of your dossier. Keep that posse away from me. In the morning when I woke up in between your floorboards, you were playing strange chords. I was only trying to get a little listening. You played all your greatest hits and kicked me out the door. Riding on a railroad, riding on a railroad. We were riding on a railroad to your heart. Ticket man was clicking lots of tickets. I was fifth in line, wishing I was higher on your chart. It's a holiday. Everything's okay. It's a holiday. A holiday. So why am I even crying when I'm standing in the sliver of your lovely shade? To know about the girls I slept with, girls I wept with. I prefer to keep that information under wraps. It's a need to know, and you don't really need to know. So if by chance you're feeling like you'd like some romance, maybe a place to dance, I could be in town with a little bit of notice. Got a couple bucks to float us, you just gotta let me know. Riding on a railroad, riding on a railroad. We were riding on a railroad to your heart. The ticket man was clicking lots of tickets. Now I'm third in line. I figure that's a better place to start. It's a holiday. Everything's okay. A holiday. A holiday.
Wow, that's a vomit song.
That's a vomit song.
That's amazing.
And I wrote it with Anthony after I wrote the first verse. He was like, oh my God, what is that? Is that a song you've written? I go, no, I just wrote it right now. And he goes, how do you do that? And then we got on a piece of paper and we wrote it together.
That's great.
And you get so excited.
I've been reading a lot about Leonard Cohen, and he agonizes for
he did.
Months and maybe years over songs. Do you ever do that, or is it all inspiration for you? Do you rewrite a lot?
You know, I'm different. I'm different in that way.
Yeah.
And some people will say a song was never complete. Nancy Griffith, great songwriter, once I read an interview and she said, people think songs are done, but they need to be edited. And right. I'm like, you know what? With all due respect, how do you know what everybody, there's no rules.
Yeah, there's
Bob
no rules.
Dylan wrote Blown in the Wind in 10 minutes.
Exactly.
What needs to be changed about that? And you know, you can watch this interview with, and Bob's my hero, right?
Yeah.
You watch this interview with him on 60 Minutes with Ed Bradley, before Ed Bradley died of cancer. And Bob Dylan gives this rare interview. And Ed Bradley says, I heard you wrote Blown in the Wind in 10 minutes. And Dylan goes, something like that. And he goes, how did you do that? And Dylan goes, I don't know.
Yeah. He has no idea.
Some kind of magic.
Yeah.
And Bradley goes, what do you mean some kind of magic? He goes, it was magic. He goes, and then Dylan quotes his own verse. He goes, darkness travels the edge of moon, his spoon. Some, even the president of the United States has to wake up, wake. That whole song, it's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding. He quotes those verses, one of them. And he goes, you tried doing it to Ed Bradley. And he goes, I can't do it anymore. Bradley goes, what do you mean you can't do it anymore? Dylan goes, I can't do that anymore. And then there's a pause and he looks at him and he goes, but I can do other things. That's the coolest thing ever, but I can do other things.
So fucking ominous.
Yeah.
I don't understand what that means.
What it means is like, okay, when you look at an old baseball pitcher and they bring him out, he can't throw 100 mile an hour fastball anymore. He's had Tommy John surgery on his arm, but he's out there. He's got the knowledge and he throws a curve and he's able to just still in smoke and mirrors be able to get it done. So Dylan's like, I can do other things.
Yeah.
And so I guess when I'm writing a song, I don't do the thing Leonard Cohen did where you labor over it forever.
Yeah.
What I do is I write it and immediately play it for an audience because I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's like, look at my new car.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work, I go back and I go, oh, I can tell when I play it for an audience.
Yeah.
I hear it with different ears. It's almost like when I wrote it, these ears are on me. But when I get to the audience, I'm putting on different ears. Almost like when you make a record or a recording, you love it. You're listening to it. You're like, oh my God, this sounds perfect. And you're in your car and then you have your friends get in. You pick them up and you go, guys, listen to this new song. Then they get in, you hear them listening to you. You're like, holy fuck, the vocals are too low. Or why is that guitar? That verse isn't good. What was I thinking? I'm able to hear it because we're using parts
but
of our brain.
But are you sure you're
we
not
don't
a little
even
paranoid?
Know.
You know?
I don't think so. I think we are able to use parts of our brain we don't even know.
Yeah.
We're not using everything in our brains. Holy shit, the three of us are in this room right now and we're connected. In some way, we are all connected and our energy is bouncing off.
Yeah.
But people don't think of things like that. That's why when I play a show, before I play a show, I stand on the side of the stage, film or anywhere, and I say a quick prayer. And my prayer is to what my idea of whatever spiritual entity is around. And all I say is, I don't pray to be good. I say, thank you for letting me do this and for giving me the gifts. And all I want to do is make these people smile. And then in my mind, I visualize them and I'm on stage and it's my last song. I visualize them with smiles on their faces, arm in arm, and redemption. In some way, they're standing on their feet. Like, I visualize it happening, and 9 times out of 10, it's going to happen because I already saw it happen.
Yeah.
It's power of what you can do with your mind.
Yeah, in some ways, you're more religious than a real religious person.
Way more. What we're doing, man, we're doing...
Yeah.
We're doing this work and we get to do it and I'm never going to lose that enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Nobody will ever take it from me because I'm already 57. It's too late. And so when I get up there, like, I don't care that I'm an idiot and I will say these things on stage. I'll talk about shitting my pants. I'll talk about, like, I want to make,
oh my God,
tell the worst things that have ever happened to me to an audience that you just should never talk about. And things you shouldn't talk about are always the best.
I'm so in love with you right now.
I'm in love with you. Let's make out.
Yeah, well, we are.
Okay, good.
Church is going to watch. Man, it's amazing. I think that's a great place to end.
Yeah, I get fired up. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I mean, I would go on forever, but I know you got a show tonight, and I want you to, start praying.
There you go. What time is it? Oh, yeah. We were in here a long time.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can still go over to Echo Park. I like all the little shops there. Is that far from here?
No. Well, I mean, you take the 5. It's pretty close, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like to shop there. I like to buy some cool. There's such cool stuff in L.A. and the little funky boutiques.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This was so fun talking to you. I love you guys. Thank
amazing.
You. You singing, you were meant for
I know.
Me,
can
made
you
my
that?
Day.
Oh, God. You made
That was so good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it.
That was great.
It was. This is.
Come here, brother.
This has been the best thing ever.
Yeah. Thank you.
I got my headphones on. Thank you.
Good on you, mate.
All right. Sing-songers. I don't think I even said your name, Steve Poltz.
We never even plugged the guitar in.
I know. It sounded great, though.
Okay, good. I didn't even have the. I never put the headphones on.
I didn't introduce you. We just started.
We just started yapping. Man, this was really fun.
Yeah. Feral Audio.